Ladies and gentlemen, we are now beginning the conference call. If you get disconnected during the call, please call 1-888-409-6709. Again, the number to get reconnected is 1-888-409-6709. At this time, your line is muted and will continue to remain muted during the duration of the call. To ask a question or if you have a comment, please press star 1. If at any time during the conference you need assistance, please press star 0. I would now like to introduce Josh Lynn, Results Senior Associate for U.S. Poverty Campaigns located in Des Moines, Iowa, to open the call.
Greetings, everybody. Welcome to the November 2013 Results U.S. Poverty Conference call. We apologize for the slight delay in getting started. Looking ahead for the call, we're excited about the call today. And so as we look ahead and head into the holiday season, we find that not all Americans can share in the joy of this season. Instead of planning lavish Thanksgiving meals with their families, they face empty plates at the dinner table. And that's why the work you do every single month on behalf of our friends and neighbors struggling in poverty is so important. And particularly, your work on protecting SNAP, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or food stamps, has been critical in defending this vital program this year. And in October, y'all did a great job at generating letters to the editor, op-eds, and editorials about the importance of SNAP and opposing deep cuts to the program to the Farm Bill. Since October 21, you've gotten 12 letters to the editor, 5 op-eds, and 2 editorials published about SNAP. And we know even more are pending. So keep sending in those media pieces, Farm Bill as Farm Bill negotiations have already begun, and every action you take helps push congressional leaders in the right direction. So for this month, we're going to take our message straight to Congress by calling agriculture aides for our senators and representatives, urging them to tell Farm Bill negotiators to protect SNAP. You know, this is what we're doing on our part to help fill those plates on Thanksgiving and the meals before and after for all Americans. So we have an exciting call for you today. So let's briefly run through the agenda. We're going to start off with an announcement from our board chair, Scott Lechman, about the results of the recent grassroots board election. Then we'll go into our legislative section from Meredith Dotson, talking about updating our work on SNAP and walk us through the November action and actually role play a conversation with an agriculture aide about protecting SNAP. Then results development manager Jen Maurer will facilitate our share section and give an update on fundraising, and then we'll end the call with roll call and announcements. Just so you know, we did have a guest speaker, Angela Sutton, lined up for the call today. We're having some trouble getting a hold of her this morning, but hopefully if she's able to join, we'll be able to do her section as well. So we'll do the ledge section first and give her time to get on the call. But first, let me turn it over to our board chair, Scott Lechman, to announce the board results. Scott, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thanks, Josh. Well, first of all, I want to congratulate all of you on just incredible successes you've had. And I know that there's lots and lots of struggle that goes into each of those successes. So congratulations. It's my honor now to announce the winner of the grassroots board position that's up. I want to thank Frank Gilbert and Roger Hudson and Lydia Pendley for putting their names up. And it was a very close election, and Lydia won a second term. So I look forward to working another 3 years with Lydia. So congratulations, Lydia Pendley. I'll turn it back over to Josh now.
Thanks, Scott, and congratulations, Lydia. Everyone knows that Lydia is one of our great leaders out in Santa Fe, New Mexico, so congratulations, and I echo Scott's thoughts about the other two candidates. So why don't we now go to Meredith for our legislative section, our legislative update. Meredith, you there?
Yep, I am. Josh, can you hear me?
Yep, go ahead.
Okay, great. Well, first of all, I know that there are some new folks probably on our call today, and let me say that we're really thrilled to have all of you on the call. And so I just want to say up front, if you find some of these complex policy points that we discuss on this national conference call overwhelming, here is the bottom line. Millions in this country are at risk of going to bed hungry. In fact, 1 out of 5 children in the U.S. are at risk of going to bed hungry in 2012. And there are proposals that would make it worse. And they would do that by cutting billions of dollars from SNAP and throwing millions off the program. So ultimately, if you don't think that is right, tell your members of Congress. and you don't need to be a policy expert. If you're, you can kind of weigh in with the level of detail that is appropriate to you, because you're an expert about what your priorities are and what priorities you think your government and society should have, and the voicing of that is really important. So there are actually some background slides about SNAP in the conference call PowerPoint presentation. And for folks who aren't sure where that is, you can find it on the homepage at results.org. You also can find it on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/resultsedfund. In addition, I did a webinar this past week for new results volunteers in Baltimore, and that will be posted shortly online at tinyurl.com/snapbasics. So if you want some background information, there's more available here. I'll just be touching on some pieces briefly. So we all know that SNAP, the food stamp program, is a critical part of our efforts to fight hunger in this country. And just this past week, the Census Bureau found that the SNAP itself lifted 5 million people out of poverty in 2012 using the supplemental poverty measure. And you can see this, this infographic put out by the Census Bureau on slide 6 of the PowerPoint presentation. And the other thing to know is, in addition to the program working, almost half the participants are children. And if you care about children and education in America, you know that hungry kids can't learn. So on October 30th, the House and Senate leaders, primarily from the House and Senate Agriculture Committees, began the formal Farm Bill Conference Committee. And they're working to reach a final deal in the next few weeks. So Congress makes changes to funding for SNAP historically in the Farm Bill every 5 years. And the conference committee, any conference committee, is when the House and Senate formally meet to craft a final bill after they each pass their own version. And then what happens from that is that they put it back to both chambers, the same text, no amendments allowed, for passage, and then it gets sent on to the president. So this conference committee is happening now, and they'll continue to meet in the coming weeks. The Senate's proposal that they passed in June cut SNAP by $4 billion. And the House passed legislation that would that they passed back in September would cut SNAP by $40 billion. And you can see the details of these proposals in the PowerPoint. And I want to just remind folks that these discussions about cutting SNAP come on top of an $11 billion across-the-board cut to SNAP, $5 billion for this year, that went into effect at the start of the month on November 1. And to put this in real terms, according to Feeding America, which is the nation's largest network of food banks, food banks would literally have to double the amount of meals that they serve in 2014 to make up for the meals lost from these cuts that just happened last week, plus the House proposed cuts. So these are serious cuts on the table right now, and serious cuts that families are already feeling with the automatic cuts going into place as the stimulus boost has gone away. So we cannot let Congress do more harm to hungry families and individuals. So this month, we're pushing our senators and representatives to weigh in with key negotiators as they work to finalize this farm bill. And our strategy is that we directly communicate with the key aides in Washington, the agriculture aides, and that we use opportunities to weigh in with members of Congress while they're home. Ultimately, we want our own members of Congress to then weigh in with the key negotiators on the farm bill. So the main key folks here are the House Agriculture Committee Chairman Frank Lucas from Oklahoma and the ranking member Colin Peterson from Minnesota. So that's who you want your representatives to weigh in with. On the Senate side, it's the Senate Agriculture Committee Chairwoman Debbie Stabenow and ranking member Thad Cochran. Stabenow is from Michigan and Cochran from Mississippi. So if your farm bill is a member of the conference committee, you can see those in the PowerPoint slide, or they have a particularly good working relationship with one of the conference committee members, it's also strategic to ask them to influence the conference committee through those connections. So here's how I would suggest you approach it. Ideally, your group might already have a point person for each Senate and House office that can make the call to the key agriculture aide about the importance of SNAP and urge them to ask their bosses to tell Farm Bill Conference Committee members to protect SNAP. So as a reminder, you can look up the name of that agriculture aide on our elected officials page, which you can find from the take action, any of the take action pages on our website. So whether or not you already have member point people divided up for your members of Congress, which some of you might have from group planning at the start of the year, or if you need to divvy that up now, we're actually going to take a pause for a minute to help you determine who those point people are. So to make sure right now, as we're in the middle of this conference call, that you're clear who in your group is talking to that key aide for each Senate, each senator, and the representative. Okay, my apologies if some of you have many members of Congress to cover. Hopefully you made some progress in divvying them up. So as you talk to these aides, make a point-blank request. Will they talk with the Farm Bill negotiators? Then ask when you can follow up to see what their boss said. In a moment, we'll demonstrate a conversation so you can see the talking points to adapt for your call or conversation and how to respond to some objections you might have. Meanwhile, if you're not the point person for a specific member of Congress, you can really help bolster the message by calling or emailing all the congressional offices and at least talking when you're called, talk to that receptionist because they're tallying up the number of calls that they get, and we want to make sure that there's kind of a broad show of support as well as kind of the more nuanced conversation with the agriculture aide. The PowerPoint has a sample script for one of these basic calls to the receptionist, and we'll also include that in next week's U.S. poverty update. So with that, let's give an example of what a call to a Senate Republican aide might look like. So I've chosen on the Senate side somebody who's a bit more of a skeptic. So I think, Jocelyn, you get to be a Senate aide today. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good. So, hi, Josh. This is Meredith Dawson, and I'm a constituent from Anytown. I know I've left you messages before, so my voice might sound familiar. When I've called on behalf of results, I'm a volunteer advocate concerned about poverty in America. Can I have 5 minutes of your time to talk about SNAP and the Farm Bill?
Yeah, I do remember you, Meredith. You're the one that always has that cute baby up on Capitol Hill. So, yeah, I've got a few minutes.
Great. Well, as you probably know, the latest USDA, U.S. Department of Agriculture data, says that more than 1 in 5 children in the U.S. were at risk of going to bed hungry last year. So you know that I actually am the mother of 2 young children, and I know firsthand that children who are hungry are tough to deal with. And if children are chronically hungry, they struggle to learn in school, they suffer from weakened immune systems, so they're more likely to get sick. So this is why I think the SNAP program, formerly known as food stamps, is so critical. And I don't know if you saw this, but just this past week, the U.S. Census Bureau reported that SNAP lifted 5 million people out of poverty in 2012. Did you happen to see that?
No, I didn't catch that yet. We've been pretty busy up here. I haven't checked that.
Yeah, it's their alternate or supplemental poverty measure data. It came out on Wednesday. I'm happy to send it to you if you want.
Yeah, that would be great.
So I'm disappointed. I just want to be upfront. I'm really disappointed that both the House and the Senate are proposing cuts to SNAP. I'm actually pretty outraged. I felt really outraged when the House passed a bill that would cut the program by $40 billion over the next 10 years. This would force at least 3.8 million Americans off the program and deny 210,000 children free meals at school. What's your office's position on that House legislation?
We don't have a position at this point, but I know that, you know, we're pretty concerned about fraud and abuse in the SNAP program.
Yeah, I've heard that from other folks also. Actually SNAP, and I looked into this myself, SNAP has one of the most strict and rigorous quality control systems of any public benefit program. So fewer than 2% of the SNAP benefits are issued to households that don't meet all of the program's eligibility guidelines, which is a record low rate. And that doesn't mean people are trying to fraud the program, of course, but Meanwhile, the Government Accountability Office, or GAO, found that SNAP has an accuracy rate above 96% and fraud rate of only 1.3%. And in particular, what's really interesting to me is that SNAP achieved its lowest error rate on record in fiscal year 2011. And that's even though caseloads were rising as more folks found themselves in poverty during the last Great Recession and administrative resources to run the program were strained. This program is working, and again, just to reiterate that SNAP lifted 5 million of people out of poverty in 2012. So how familiar are you with the House bill's so-called work provisions?
I'm somewhat familiar, but I haven't really looked at them all that closely.
Okay. Well, the legislation in the House side would force 1.7 million unemployed Americans off the program. And these are folks who live in high unemployment areas and want to work, but cannot find a job or slot in a job training program. And this provision called the Sutherland Amendment is an additional policy in the House bill, and it really doesn't make sense to me. So it's a provision that throws even parents with young children as young as one, who cannot find work or unable to find safe and affordable child care for their young children off of SNAP. Do you think you can't handle the child care issues for the senator?
No, I don't.
Okay. Well, I can tell you that child care is incredibly expensive, again, an area of firsthand expertise. And meanwhile, only 1 out of 6 low-income families eligible for child care assistance are able to receive it now. So imagine this would get a lot. That would be even more dramatic if millions more families were getting kicked off the program. And the Sutherland Amendment actually gives states the incentive to slash SNAP by giving them half the savings if they kick people off the program. So that's a bit, I hope you will look into that piece in particular, the Sutherland Amendment.
Sure, yeah, no, I need to look into more, but, you know, we've also heard that the program doesn't do enough about encouraging folks to work.
Yeah, well, SNAP has strict work requirements for adults who don't have children. So overall, the basic law is that they can only get SNAP for 3 months out of every 5 years, unless they're working more than 20 hours a week. So governors can ask for waivers in areas of high unemployment. And the House bill takes away that important state flexibility, that ability for governors to make sure the program is meeting local needs. So currently there are about 3 unemployed workers for every 1 job opening in our economy. And what we need is not to penalize people who are looking for jobs, but what we should focus on is a stronger economy so that they're well-paying jobs, and that's the way to reduce SNAP participation.
Yeah, but, you know, this program is spending is skyrocketed and it's out of control, and you know we've got to cut spending to address the deficit.
Yeah, well, I mean, I have to say what's so effective about SNAP is that it actually responds to economic downturn, so it provides this temporary cushion during tough economic times to ensure that millions of Americans, and we're talking mostly about children, seniors, and veterans, haven't gone as hungry or haven't been as struggling to put food on the table during the downturn, while these families are striving to get back on their feet. And so what happens is automatically SNAP costs shrink as the economy improves, and people can put food on their own table again. And the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office, I know you know the CBO well, they predict that SNAP spending as a percentage of the GDP, the gross domestic product, will fall back down to the 1995 levels by the year 2019 as our economy fully recovers. So ultimately, our long-term deficits aren't going to be solved by slashing SNAP. So more fundamentally, I believe that we cannot balance the budget on the backs of our most vulnerable Americans. There have been big deficit reduction packages, the bipartisan deficit reduction packages. They've exempted SNAP from cuts because they recognize the critical safety net program, how critical it is for millions of struggling Americans. So by fighting hunger, we're actually investing in our future economy and making sure children are healthy and not hungry at school. So let me get to the chase. This is my request. I would like you to talk to your boss and ask her to weigh in directly with both Senate Agriculture Committee Chair Debbie Stabenow and Ranking Member Thad Cochran, telling them to protect SNAP in any new farm bill or any other budget legislation. Can you talk to her about that?
You know, well, we've been following the Farm Bill, and it's kind of waiting to see what they're going to produce. You know, for a volunteer, you know a lot about this program. So, you know, I will take this back to the senator.
Great. And when will you get to talk to her?
Well, we have all staff policy meetings on Tuesday, and I know we'll discuss the Farm Bill and the overall budget situation then.
Oh, great. Yeah, especially since it's moving right now, I hope you can do that. Can I schedule a time to give you a ring on Wednesday morning to follow up?
Sure. You know, right at 9:30 works.
Perfect. I'll call you then. So thank you so much for your time and your work to follow these policy issues there in D.C. Really appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you, Meredith.
Great. Thanks, Josh, for being my Senate aide, and I am excited I made you work for a female senator. Hopefully there will be more of those in the future. So as a reminder, this is just an example. We wanted to kind of make it real. You probably won't get the different kinds of questions or objections that we outlined in this this sample role play, but I wanted to walk through some of the things you might hear, and the slides in the conference call presentation give you different talking points on how to respond. And remember, of course, in any conversation you're having with a member of Congress or their staff, it's always fine. It's actually a great strategy, in my opinion, if you can say, you know, I don't know the answer to that question, but I'll find out and I'll get back to you. Because you're demonstrating that you intend to continue that relationship and keep on them, and you're also setting yourself up to be a resource for that office. So don't worry if you get a question you can't answer. We'll help you and put you in either even better standing with that House or Senate office in the future. So, and the other thing I want to really emphasize is if you have real expertise to share, especially if you're a former or current SNAP participant or you know the program firsthand, please definitely share that in your conversations. So don't forget to work on face-to-face meetings. Just as a reminder, 97% of congressional staff say that in-person issue visits from constituents influence policymakers, and 46% say it has a lot of influence. You can see that data from the Congressional Management Foundation on slide 19. So follow up with those face-to-face meeting requests and upcoming town hall, finding out about upcoming town halls. You can tailor the talking points we just walked through for a face-to-face meeting back home. And the House is on recess now, and then both the House and Senate go on recess again later this month. You guys have done a great job in getting face-to-face meetings. You've gotten way more this year already than last year. But this is kind of the home stretch, and if you can get to your member of Congress in the next few weeks in particular, it will make a big difference. And I urge folks to really, in particular, go for your senators, because we need even the senators that are our allies making sure they're voicing really clearly and explicitly to Senate leadership that they will not accept the draconian cuts that passed in the House of Representatives to SNAP. So with that, since we do have a bit of time, I want to just check and make sure. I don't think Angela, we've been able to get Angela on the call, but any chance?
Yeah, hi. This is Kate Scully with Witnesses to Hunger. I'm very sorry about Angela not being able to jump on. You know, I'm sure her phone might have been set off, or she might have had some issues come up with her son, and we'll certainly be following up with her about those. But I would certainly love to talk about witnesses or answer any questions that I might be able to answer.
Okay, great. Well, Joss, I know since you had put together some kind of overall guiding questions to walk through with Angela, do you want to take this part so we can learn, make sure that folks know a bit more about the Witnesses to Hunger program?
Sure, absolutely. So, well, thank you, Kate. We really appreciate you you being able to get on at the last minute this morning. So, you know, as you know, our folks this month, and in fact, most of this year, have been really working to protect the SNAP program from deep cuts that Congress is contemplating at this time. And we know that Witnesses to Hunger program is certainly very, you know, connected to that issue as well. And we had, you know, Angela speak at our conference this past summer. But for those of you for those of our volunteers who were not able to be at the conference this summer, can you just tell us a little bit about the Center for Hunger-Free Communities and the Witnesses to Hunger program?
Sure, of course. So the Center for Hunger-Free Communities is housed at Drexel University, which is in Philadelphia. And Witnesses grew out of a research project called Children's Health Watch, where we have interviewers go to the emergency room at St. Christopher's Hospital in Philadelphia. But there's sites along the East Coast that do this research, and they talk to families one-on-one about food insecurity and housing insecurity and other issues they're facing, and how policies like SNAP and LIHEAP and other programs impact those families and help them to be more food secure. So out of that research grew the project Witnesses to Hunger, when our executive director, Dr. Mariana Chilton, was getting called to testify as an expert, and really, you know, she knew that the moms and dads she was talking to in the emergency room were the experts on the issues of hunger and poverty, and their voices really needed to be heard. So started with 40 women in North Philadelphia that were given digital cameras to take pictures of what their lives really looked like. We thought the photographs were a way to really, you know, highlight the issues that they were facing and a way to bring their voices to D.C. and to anywhere else that their voices should be heard. And then we work with the witnesses to share their stories and their experiences, as well as their thoughts on what changes need to be made in D.C. So we work with, there's all over 80 witnesses right now along the East Coast. We have sites in Boston, Baltimore, Camden, New Jersey, and Philadelphia. But every time the witnesses speak, they certainly encourage other people that, you know, as they share their stories, that everyone they speak to is now a witness to hunger and needs to talk about these issues and needs to raise up their voices and echo them. So I would certainly encourage all the volunteers. Our website has a lot of the witnesses' photographs and profiles. So if you go to centerforhungerfreecommunities.org, or if you Google witnesses to hunger, you can get to know the witnesses and certainly, you know, share their stories or share your own stories if you have stories about hunger or poverty, because it's important to really put a face to these issues.
Great. Thank you so much, Kate. So, you know, as you know, and our volunteers know, you know, SNAP recipients have already seen a cut in their benefits that began last week, and Meredith highlighted that in her presentation as well. And then now we're looking at even deeper cuts being proposed, you know, in the Farm Bill. You know, based on your work with the witnesses and there at the center, you know, can you talk a little bit about the impact that this would have on the families and the witnesses that are in your program?
Yes, it's a huge impact. I mean, the witnesses, before the cut happened on November 1st, were already, you know, the SNAP benefits were not lasting for the full month. I know Angela has seen recent cuts to her SNAP benefits that she's working to appeal, and she's not exactly sure why. I know, you know, some of the SNAP offices, you know, they're understaffed and overworked, so it's hard sometimes when, you know, people just can get lost in things. So they're already dealing with, you know, losing of SNAP benefits and not knowing why, and their SNAP benefits lasting for the full month, or even if they're able to spread it out over the full month, they're not buying fruits and vegetables and fresh foods. They're largely buying oodles of noodles or Chef Boyardee or canned foods that aren't the most nutritious things for them and for their children to be eating. I would suggest to the advocates on the phone, if you are able to watch the movie A Place at the Table, which features a number of stories, one of which is of a witness to hunger. And she talks about growing up always eating oodles of noodles and being so sick of it and never wanting to see it again. And then, you know, as she was struggling to make ends meet with her two kids, you know, having to go to the store and buy that for her children, and just how upset she was and how sad she was that she had to make that choice because her SNAP benefits and her wages were just not enough to put fresh foods on the table. So with the November 1st cuts, where families of four are seeing cuts of $36 a month, that is meals off the table for families who are already struggling to make the SNAP benefits last. And we have witnesses who come into the office. We have, you know, food there that they can take home, no questions asked, and we certainly work with them to do some ShopRite orders or things if they're in an emergency situation. And over the last week, we've definitely seen an increase of that.
Well, thanks, Kate. So, you know, as someone who works with these families, you know, what do you see are the biggest challenges that people, you know, face in trying to get and stay out of poverty, you know, these days?
So, I mean, a lot of the witnesses and the vast majority of people on SNAP are working, and they're working full time, but the wages are just not enough to make ends meet. Minimum wage is not anywhere near, you know, enough to support yourself and support your family, to pay rent, to pay for diapers, to pay for food. It's just not enough. So even the witnesses who are, I guess people could say, playing by the rules and are working, they are still struggling. And then as witnesses, numerous of them are trying to go back to school and further their education so that they can hopefully seek higher wages. It's just really impossible with the cost of childcare, with trying to work and go to school, that a lot of witnesses try to do it piece by piece, but it just takes a really long time. And as Barbie talks about in the Place at the Table movie, she said she could, you know, stop working for 2 years and go to school and get better wages, but what are her kids going to eat for those 2 years? Where are they going to live? That she doesn't have the ability to not be working, to be able to go to school and further her education. So there's just a lot of barriers that people face, even when they're trying to do better for themselves and their family.
Sure. And, you know, in addition to just kind of like the procedural barriers and changes in eligibility and things like that that are being, you know, implemented or proposed, you know, with SNAP and these other programs, you know, we also hear a lot of politicians out there that, you know, just plain say real mean things about people living in poverty, you know, calling them lazy, you know, not working, you know, they want to live off the government and not do anything productive and that kind of stuff. You know, this is kind of a question out of left field, but I was just curious, is in your work with them, you know, have you seen the impact, kind of like the psychological impact of that on the folks that y'all work with? Have you, you know, heard any comments or stories from folks about how that makes them feel?
Yeah, I mean, it is degrading, and it is untrue, and it is mean and malicious. Living in poverty is hard. It is hard work to try to make ends meet on a very limited budget, to try to keep a roof over your head, to have to be fighting every single day for your benefits, to have to, you know, fight your landlord because there's mold in the ceiling or there's rodents. There's always a lot of fighting that has to happen with the witnesses and with anyone living in poverty. And I personally get offended when people talk about them as being lazy because I know how hard they work, and I know that, you know, people who make good wages, I myself, you know, I'm in a good job and have a roof over my head that's stable and can put food on the table, that I would not be able to survive what the witnesses are surviving. And I would challenge any member of Congress to be able to try to, you know, live for an extended period of time in the lives that they're living and then still call them lazy. They are working very hard, and it is a very difficult situation that they're in. And they deserve our help. And they deserve our respect, and don't deserve to be called lazy or any other names.
Thanks, Kate.
Sorry, I get very really passionate about it.
That's great. That's great. We need people like you doing that. So, thanks, Kate, for giving us a little bit, you know, clearer picture of kind of some of the challenges these folks are facing right now. So, so if you have a couple of minutes, Kate, I thought maybe we'd open it up and see if our volunteers had any questions for you. Do you have a couple minutes to do that?
Sure, of course.
Okay, so Anthony, if you wouldn't mind telling folks how they can get into the queue, and then folks, we urge you to ask Kate questions.
Okay, I'd like to remind your listeners, with any questions, please press star 1. Again, that's star 1 on the telephone keypad. We'll pause just a moment to compile the roster. Again, with any questions, please press star 1. We've had a question come in from Minneapolis.
Hi, this is Paul. Kate, I just really appreciate the work that you do. I've had an occasion to use food shelves in the past, and I can imagine the kind of balancing act that parents have to go on to be able to survive in a kind of a difficult world, and then to be faced with things like cuts. It's hard to imagine why people want to do this. And I guess it's probably based on the idea that there is fraud in the program that needs to be rooted out. And what would your response be to, I guess we've gotten a pretty good idea of some of the work done by the agencies in Congress that have helped to establish the credibility of the program. It's that what do you say when people say, well, there's fraud in this program that we have to combat?
Yes, I mean, that is definitely a thing that we hear a lot. And it is unfortunate because SNAP is one of the programs that I hope was touched on earlier, and I'm sure it was, that has the lowest fraud rate of most of, you know, one of the programs with the lowest fraud rate across any of the federal programs. I mean, if you look at other programs within the Farm Bill, that the crop subsidies and things, the fraud rates with those programs are so much higher than the SNAP program. So cutting out fraud and abuse, it really is not an issue with SNAP. Certainly in any program, there's going to be people that might not be following all of the rules. And I'm not saying that they, you know, if they're not following the rules and if they don't really, I don't want to say deserve SNAP, but if they're in a situation where they might not be needing the benefit, certainly they should not be part of the program. But that's not the vast majority of the people on SNAP. The vast majority are the Barbies and the Angelas and the moms who are trying so hard to just feed their kids, and cutting the program impacts the kids and their health and well-being and overall our future. So if you look at the numbers and you look at the facts, what they're saying is just not true. So we really try to inform legislators that just because you're hearing it doesn't mean that it's accurate, and to really show them the numbers and to show them the stories that, you know, yes, there might be a surfer in California that got a lot of media attention, but here are 10 moms who didn't get the media attention but are you know, working hard but not able to make ends meet, and really need this program in order to feed their kids.
I see that it's the Government Accountability Office, GAO, that verifies the high rate of accuracy and honesty in the program. So thank you.
Thanks,
sure.
Paul.
Thanks for the question.
Anthony, do we have anyone else in the queue?
We do. Our next question comes from Bernardsville.
Go ahead, Bernardsville.
This is Jeff Olson in Bernardsville, New Jersey, and I heard you say that you had witnesses in the Camden, New Jersey area. Could you tell us just a little bit more about that effort there?
Sure.
And I just want to plug in.
Sure. Sorry for cutting you off. So I'm just excited about it. So we have 10 mothers and grandmothers from Camden, New Jersey, who just started, you know, the Witnesses program in January of this past year. And they did an exhibit. So we do exhibits of the Witnesses photographs. They did an exhibit at Campbell Soup Foundation, or Campbell Soup, I guess, Corporation Building. The foundation helped support us with the Witnesses in early summer. And then we did another exhibit of their photographs in September at a gallery in Camden, New Jersey. And there are 10 incredible women who have amazing pictures of their kids and their grandkids. They speak a lot about, we don't tell the witnesses only talk about SNAP and only talk about hunger. You know, we want them to talk about what issues impact them. And a lot of the Camden witnesses talked about housing being such an issue in Camden, that there's even a few of them took pictures of what's known as Tent City in Camden, where people set up tents, and there's a little community right off the highway in Camden that people are living at, and there's actually a wait list to be able to get to live in tents. But housing is such an issue in Camden. So I would encourage you to go to our website and learn about the witnesses. They're amazing ladies that talk about a lot of different issues.
Great. Thanks, Bernardsville. I think we have time for one more question, and we actually have a question from someone here in Des Moines. Hold on.
Very welcome to go ahead with Des Moines.
Thank you. And thank you for talking to us. But every time I mention food stamps, I get a response that I have not got an argument for, and the response is, I saw someone buying... Let's just fill in the blank with, we could put potato chips, we could put candy, we could put anything in there, with food stamps. Or I have a friend who saw someone buying with food stamps. So they're not being used correctly. Could you give me a good answer for that one?
It's a tough one, and it's definitely something we hear of a lot, that, you know, people want to limit food stamps to only nutritious items, or only particular items that they deem to be what the stamps should be used for. And while we definitely, you know, want people being able to buy nutritious food, a lot of times they can't afford it. You know, a pack of ramen noodles is like 99 cents, but, you know, getting apples or broccoli or something else is so much more expensive. And the ramen noodles will fill up a belly, whereas having an apple might not. So before we really judge people and their purchases, just understanding where they're coming from and knowing that, you know, their SNAP benefits don't cover, you know, fresh produce and chicken and things that we might deem as things that they should be purchasing. So I always encourage people to get to know someone who's on SNAP and maybe have that conversation with them, but not to judge them for their choices in life because you don't know where they're coming from. So I hope that helps.
Thank you.
Great. Well, Kate, thank you so much. Again, thank
sure.
you for stepping in so quickly to be our guest speaker today, and you did a fabulous job, and we
thank
you
you.
Love the work that y'all are doing in the Witnesses to Hunger Project, and we look forward to working with you going forward as well. So thank you today for being on the call.
Sure, and if you don't mind, I would love to just put in a quick plug. We're having an event, if anyone's in the Philadelphia area or would like to come, this December is the five-year anniversary of the very first Witnesses to Hunger exhibit. So on December 11th, we're doing a large exhibit covering all of our sites, and there'll be a number of witnesses there for people to talk with and learn from. So it's December 11th. All the information's on our website, and we would certainly love to have a bunch of results advocates there to certainly learn from the witnesses and so we can learn from you.
Absolutely, Kate. And if you want to email me details about it, I'm happy to put it in our weekly update.
I really appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay. Well, thanks, Kate. Thanks again. And thanks for the great questions, folks. So now let me turn it over to our development manager, Jen Maurer, for our fundraising and share section. Jen, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can everyone hear me okay?
Yep, go ahead.
Great. Thank you. So, yep, I'm your development manager. This is a great call so far. Thanks for having me on. So I want to join to thank each and every one of you so far who has had a fundraising event. This whole year has been full of them. The last 2 weeks have been really busy. In fact, just in the last few weeks, we've raised well over $100,000 for results, which is incredible. And that wouldn't happen without you and your dedication. And I want to let you know that these events, from a small house party to a huge gala, are all so critical because they raise the most valuable money we receive. It sounds strange to say that some money for results is more valuable than another, but it's kind of true. The money raised by you, our grassroots partners, has no restrictions on it like grants. This means you help us to be agile and to respond strategically to urgent opportunities. You know, this money also leverages grants because funders love to see what a deep and wide individual giving base we have. You also bring in monthly donors, and that stable stream of funding allows us to plan for the whole year. And perhaps the other wonderful thing about fundraising is that you're making people happy. Think about how it feels when you donate. It feels great. So with one event, you are raising valuable money for results, cultivating brand new volunteers, and making people feel great. Here are a few special shout-outs to groups who have gone above and beyond most recently. First, thank you to Houston, Austin, and Ann Arbor. Those are a mix of mostly global, but some domestic volunteers as well, who held events to let their guests connect and be inspired by our founder, Sam Daly Harris. Thank you to KidStep in Bremerton and Washington State, who hosted our very own Larry Reed, the executive director of the Microcredit Summit campaign. And thank you to Columbus and New Jersey, who held joint global and domestic events so that their partners could share their strengths and donors could learn about all sides of our work. And last but never least, thank you to Inland Empire in California, who bravely invited college students into a partner's home for a beer tasting. Lynn has lots of guts. So we still have some events coming up in Albuquerque, Santa Fe, and Olympia, Washington before the end of the year. And I know some groups are also hosting virtual Thanksgiving feasts. So just really thank you all so much for the work you've done through this whole year, through friends and family, your individual giving, and encouraging others to learn about results and give to results. If you'd like to host an event by the end of the year, join a virtual feast, or actually plan for 2014, now is a great time to reach out to Cindy Levin at clevin@results.org or give her a call. And it's been a real honor to work with all of you this year. Thank you so much.
Well, it sounds like there was probably a miscommunication, but so why don't I'll go ahead and leave the share section. Are y'all still on the line? Somebody on the line?
Are you calling for one of the shares?
Yes, we'd like to go to Bill Baker to share about his media, or either that or Jenny Votes.
Hi, this is Bill. I had always imagined that you had to work for a newspaper or have national name recognition to get an op-ed article published. So I was surprised to see mine in print last week. At Joss's instigation at our last free agents call, I wrote a draft, and I tried to combine our information with a provocative first line, like, tonight, one out of five children in America will go to bed hungry, or a personal story to engage the reader. Joss very kindly agreed to read what I'd written and comment. He did some fact-checking, made a few spots clearer. He also suggested a process of emailing the article to an editor, calling to see if it arrived, and following up in a few days if it didn't appear in the paper. I have to say that the feeling of being so well supported in that way helped me to push the button to send it to the Stanford Advocate and Greenwich Time. Realizing the papers would not publish something already published somewhere else, I set to work on a second version and sent it to the New Haven Register. Here, Joss's method of following up showed its value. The managing editor had said, when I first talked to him, that he'd read it, but he hadn't. The follow-up, along with a comment that I wanted to have Congresswoman Rosa DeLauro's back, it read, and it appeared in the paper the next day. So we now have covered the two largest cities in Connecticut. Two subsequent happenings, a chapter is going to meet with the editorial editor of The Advocate to agree on ways that we can support each other and to agree on an MO for moving forward. I think he recognizes a source of material when he sees it. And just yesterday, the editorial in The Advocate was on the cuts to SNAP from the 1st of November and called on the governor to step up, help for the hungry. I think our contact helped that get into his mind. So now I'm working on a third version for the Hartford Current in the state capital with the opening line, "Who likes a moocher?" And we'll see where we go from here. But I encourage everyone who hasn't taken a stab at this to try. It's fun.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Bill, and congratulations on getting three op-eds published in just 8 days. Thanks so much, and keep up the good work. And everybody out there, please know that continuing to do your media work is also important, and will certainly have an impact on these farm bill negotiations. It's never too late to submit something in. So now let's go to Jenny Votes, who's going to do a brief share about a recent fundraiser in Columbus. Jenny, you there?
Yes, I am, Joss. How are you?
Fine. Go ahead.
Good. We just had our annual fall fundraiser in Columbus last Saturday. It was a cool and cloudy day and an away football game day, which is significant if you have a school like The Ohio State University in town. Our venue was perfect, and it was an open space, centrally located, which we got for a mere $50. Some of the features which made our event so wonderful were a display of a week's worth of SNAP food for a family with a list of prices and nutritional value, posters with SNAP myths and facts, which were around the room, a display of our published letters to the editor, great food and wine donated by our group, and Animoto, which is a video composite of pictures with music that one of our members created showing local poverty stats and results actions. We all loved it. It was so cool. I'm trying to get the link to it, and I'll send it to you if we get it. We also showed the 2013 Everyday Heroes video, which explains results, mission, and successes very well. Our speakers were a friend from the community who spoke about being a SNAP recipient very movingly, and Joe Reif, our new global group leader, who spoke about why he has been called to do this work. He was outstanding, and he also did our ask. Several people were said to increase their donation after hearing his talk. It was a great overall event. Unfortunately, we had a very small audience, and that's for a couple of reasons, which I want to talk about. There were several competing events in the community, which we really couldn't help. We thought we had a handle on what was going on, but we can't control other people's events, obviously. And they targeted one of our typical pools of invitees, Unitarian Universalists. I was also away for almost a month before the event for family reasons, we didn't get very much publicity, and we didn't do really vigorous inviting. There was something, this is something we're going to be reflecting on as we plan for the next fundraiser. Our tally so far, however, is about $4,285 with a few outstanding promised donations. One highlight from this event was an artist from the community stopped in. He was so moved by our cause, he came kind of casually strolling through, and I met him, and he said he wants to work with us to put on the next fundraiser and bring in artists from the community and have them donate art for auction. His son's a musician, and he said he could get us some music. He said, but it would have to be in a much bigger space because he knows so many people who would want to come that they couldn't fit in the space we were in. So I will say we're not discouraged. Maybe, you know, if we had had this perfect event in front of 100 people, we would have been happier. But our group has been looking for ways to become better known and part of the larger community. And so maybe we'll be heading in that direction from that contact. But we're satisfied, we're pleased, and we are very, very, we really loved working together, and we had a great time. So that's our story.
Great. Thanks, Ginny. We appreciate it, and congratulations on a successful event, and hopefully next year it'll be successful and have more people. Now let's turn it over to Meredith, who is going to do our roll call.
Great. Thanks, Josh. So with this month's roll call, we have two questions that we want you to answer this month. Number one is, how many people are in the room? Number two, how many contacts will your group make with congressional offices about protecting SNAP? So this includes all the direct communication with that each of your House and Senate point people makes with the aide, as well as other communications, you know, calls and emails that your group makes to reinforce that message. So in the minutes, the operator will call the groups by city. When your city's called, simply answer the question like this. Our numbers are 6 and 18. Remember, the operator will unmute your phone when your city's called, so you don't have to do anything to your phone. And the questions are, one, how many people in the room? Two, how many contacts will your group make with congressional offices about protecting SNAP? Great. With that, can we start the roll call?
Certainly, ma'am. We begin with Los Angeles.
Hi, there is one in the room, and we will make 4 contacts.
And we continue to Orange County.
2 and 3.
And now San Diego.
San Diego in the room, 3 and 4 contacts.
Next we have Aurora.
Our numbers are 2 and 3.
And then Stanford.
Number is 1 and 18.
We have 2 now from the District of Columbia. Ms. Dodson, go ahead with your numbers.
Our numbers are 1 here and 7.
Okay, and the other is Mr. Arena. Go ahead. We're moving now to Des Moines.
Our numbers are 9 and 17.
And now to Lenzburg.
Our numbers are 2 and 6.
Salinas, go ahead.
Our numbers are 4 and 11.
And we have Baltimore.
Our numbers are 5 and 10.
And now Detroit.
Our numbers are 3 and 6.
We move now to Minneapolis.
Our numbers are 3 and 10.
And now St. Louis.
Numbers are 2 and 4.
We have 2 signs from Quorum. Ms. Cunningham, go ahead.
1 and 3.
And now Ms. Feather.
It's the same.
Okay, we continue to Antrim, New Hampshire.
This is Bill. I'm actually in Stanford, but it's 1 and 5.
Now we have Bernardsville.
The numbers are 6 and 20.
Cincinnati, go ahead.
8 and 31 for Cincinnati, and 1 and 3 from Meriden for Kentucky.
We continue now to Columbus.
Our numbers are 12 and 12.
Chambersburg, go ahead.
Well, our numbers are 1 and 6.
We'll move now to Houston.
Our numbers are 3 and 6.
And now Arlington.
4 and 8.
And we conclude with Charlottesville.
4 and 12.
Oh, there.
Cynthia, do we have the totals in the D.C. office?
Yes, we do. Your numbers, individuals in the room, are 80, and contacts will be 212.
Great. That makes a big difference, folks, so thank you so much for that. We're going to close out the call, and I actually want to start off this section by announcing for folks who haven't heard that one of our longtime results volunteers, Al Sheehan, passed away a few weeks ago. You can see his picture on slide 23. I've got to know Al pretty well over the years. Al was really an inspiring and one of the most insightful advocates I've ever gotten a chance to meet. He was an author and one of the main kind of thought leaders on something called the Basic Income Guarantee. And that work that he did with BEG brought him to Washington, D.C. pretty regularly for several years. And we'd often grab dinner while he'd be in town, or I'd look him up if I was out in Southern California. He was a master of getting letters to the editor printed and also a master of getting called on in town hall type events. He was he batted 1,000 when it came for getting called on by Senator Feinstein at her Wednesday California constituent breakfast. And as you know, there are a lot of people from California, so that was a notable feat. So I hope we'll all keep Al and his family in our thoughts and our thoughts. He really was one of the most inspiring folks I've ever gotten a chance to know with results, and we'll be missing him dearly. So with that, let me close out with some other final announcements. So we continue to do outreach in many areas of the country. We're enlisting new volunteers in results anti-poverty work, and we're on track to make this probably the biggest year, certainly in recent, since the first early years of results U.S. poverty campaign work in terms of building our presence. So we have full-on new results groups in places that include Creston, Iowa, Whitefish, Montana, the folks in Arlington, Virginia, Orange County, California, and we've restarted our group in the Chicago, Illinois area. In addition, we're actually in different stages of training new groups in places that include Boston, West Los Angeles, Kansas City, Waterloo, Iowa, a restart of our presence in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and also in Baltimore, Maryland. And we're actually working to start 7 additional groups, ideally. We're going for these new groups getting started before the end of the year or early next year in places that include Burlington, Vermont, the Portsmouth and Durham areas of New Hampshire, Maine, both Portland and Lewiston area, Lexington, Kentucky, Louisville, Kentucky. We heard we have some folks in the Cincinnati area and hoping to build our presence there, and also Indianapolis, Indiana. So, if you know people in these areas or other areas of the country who would be interested in getting involved, please do invite them to the intro, one of our upcoming results introductory calls. You could find those on our homepage at results.org. Or you can just put them in touch directly with me, and I'll make sure they're in touch with the staff members who are working to start groups there. So I want to flag some upcoming events. We have media training. This coming Tuesday, the 12th at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. I'm not going to do all the details with the phone numbers because you can get them on our website. And it's hard to say them slow enough to make sure you can hear it. So that's, again, media call this Tuesday, the 12th at 8 p.m., an introductory call Wednesday, the 13th at 9 p.m., a free agents call Monday, the 18th at 1 p.m., or Tuesday, the 19th at 9 p.m. These are all Eastern Time. And then please do mark your calendars. Our international conference in 2014 will be June 21st to 24th here in D.C., and we'll have more details shortly. You're going to find a full list of upcoming events along with call-in numbers on our events calendar, the events section under results.org. finally, please do listen to me right now in case you already started getting distracted by desserts after the conference call. Our December call time is different than normal. We're doing a joint global and domestic, joint U.S. Poverty and International Poverty conference call on Saturday, December 14th, usual day, at 2 p.m. Eastern time. This is a chance for everyone to get on the line from across the country, including our folks out in Alaska for whom 8:30 a.m. was just way too early. So we're going to have our call at 2 p.m. Eastern time in December. So with that, I'm going to ask the operator to unmute all the lines so we can wish each other a happy Thanksgiving and feel free to gobble.